Welcome to the Finding North podcast. I'm Chris Morris. This week's story is a historical fiction called The Human Miracle. Please enjoy. 24th of December, 1914. 1 minute, lads. Captain Alan's static eyes are fixed upon the watch on his wrist. With his other shaking hand, he holds his silver whistle to his mouth. In just 1 minute, its shrill tone will signal that it's time to go. Time to leave the sanctuary of the muddy waterlogged trench and race into no man's land. A hopeless and compassionless place, where angry machine gun fire ripples through air heavy with smoke, ash and misery. Where grenades bring about unimaginable suffering and death through fire and rage. Where few are found alive. James looks from his captain to the men around him. Their faces are rigid with the chill and the debilitating anxiety. He realises he can barely feel his own heart beating in the piercing cold. Maybe it's frozen, like everyone else's. For in a place like this, men's hearts had long ago hardened, and now horror and despair sit and refuse to move, wrapping themselves cruelly around the men and dragging them into the deepest parts of despondency. 30 seconds, Captain Alan says, eyes still glued to his watch. Good luck, everyone. Just concentrate on the plan. Think about the plan. The whistle will blow. And then we charge over the top of the trench. And then? Presuming you're not instantly shot the moment one of those damned Germans spots your head poking out from your trench. Unhelpful. Then we advance forwards. And then? Assuming the German bullets haven't ripped through your body like a knife through cheese. Unhelpful. And then we find the nearest enemy trench and we clear it out. Good luck. Unhelpful. It must only be a few seconds now. James is glad he can't see Captain Alan's watch. Every sordid tick and every vile talk must send another twisted dagger through the once hopeful heart of his captain. Every beat of the heart is another dark step towards the inevitable push and probable failure. James thinks of his father, of how proud he would be of his son at this moment.
True bravery, my boy, is doing the very thing that you are most afraid of doing.
And James thinks he will be brave, courageous enough to fly out into the fray and scream as he hopes to avoid a bullet to the brain or a sudden end in fire, ash and fury. He wonders how painful death might be. He has seen men with lost limbs and shattered hopes. One man was carted back to the trenches with what looked to be half his face missing. Could this be his own fate? Better not to know. Better just to prepare. Sir! A soldier James doesn't recognise comes tumbling around the corner. His red face shows a desire for exhortation and... could that be hope in his eyes? What is it, man? Captain Alan fumes. Can't you see we're getting ready to... The Germans, sir, the soldier interrupts. They've stopped firing. They're coming out of their trenches unarmed. Moments before, the scene around James had been filled with the dreadful sounds one would usually associate with war. Gunfire. Explosions. Screaming. Now a gentle wind carries the sounds of Weihnachtslieder to the British trenches.
Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht.
And from James's own side, his own people join them in English. The words are different, but the tune and the sentiment are one and the same. Soon the battlefield has become something extraordinary. Something remarkable. Even wonderful. At first, James trusts it as much as he would trust a dog alone with a meat pie not to eat it as soon as its owner's back was turned. But upon some encouragement from his friends, he eventually dares to poke his head high enough so that he could see over the trench. And there, sure enough, are the Germans. Seemingly unarmed. Some of them waving sticks with stained white garments attached to them. All of them singing. He can even hear, somewhere among the Germans, an accordion player accompanying the joyful and tranquil carols.
Good God, James gasps. Are those Christmas trees?
up and down the German trenches, several small trees have indeed been assembled. It even looks as though they have baubles on them. And James would question where on earth the Germans could have gotten these from, if a thousand other questions and wonders weren't already circling around inside his busy mind. "No firing," Captain Lance commands. "No firing, lads. Let's see what they have to say." The Germans are companionable. More than this, they are kind. Up until now, it has been easy to ignore the fact that they are fellow human beings, men with families, dreams and ambitions. People who have known heartache, love and loss, happiness and pleasure, success and failure. Because until this moment, when both sides have lain down their arms and now shake hands and sing together, James and his fellow soldiers had barely seen a German. They had only known them through the sounds of battle and the occasional smoky silhouettes many yards away. Now that James can see their eyes, feel the touch of their hands, recognise the same look of temporary relief on their faces that he feels in his own heart and soul, he realises with profound weight that both sides in this war are not so different. He meets many German men. All of them smile, and most speak no English. But word spreads swiftly that a ceasefire has been agreed until 00:00 hours on Saturday morning, the 26th of December. And as James wanders no man's land and greets men who moments before were his bitter enemies, he can't help but feel somewhat lucky. These last 3 months have been the hardest of his entire life. He has made new friends, lived, worked and fought side by side with them, only to watch them fall in flurries of gunpowder and smoke. As the battlefield has grown duller and greyer, it has opened its great mouth wider to claim countless men like James, swallowing them whole and spitting out the bones of shock, terror and endless sorrow with a grin on its wicked face. But tonight and tomorrow, they will be granted a temporary reprieve. And oh, how James's heart will not allow him to think of what comes afterwards. Each side has given the other leave to recover their dead. And on both sections of the battlefield, a mixture of German and British troops help each other to carefully carry their fellow fallen men. A mere few hours before, James would have thought this an impossible scenario. But now it just adds to the growing number of miracles happening all around him. "Could it be that I've died?" James thinks. "That all of this is simply my imagination? A result of my last fleeting hope? That war would be over and enemies could become friends?" But no. James decides that this really must be happening, because never in his wildest dreams could he ever have imagined it.
"Hallo. Darf ich mich Ihnen einschließen?"
James is sitting at the top of a muddy hill, looking down at the incredible scene below. The troops are now exchanging Christmas gifts and drinking beer together. The singing continues, and in fact gets louder as the night darkens. He looks around to find the voice that has spoken, a German troop around the same age as James. "Sorry, mate," he says. "I don't speak a word of German."
"Ich wünschte, ich würde Englisch sprechen. Ich kann dich nicht verstehen."
James offers his hands to the soldier. "James." The soldier takes it firmly and shakes.
"Oscar."
The pair sit in silence and watch their comrades. The dead have all been attentively removed, and now it almost looks like a simple celebration, one you might find back home. It might even look pleasant if it weren't for the jagged rows of barbed wire, the mounted machine guns, and the gaping holes in the ground where limbs and lives have been forever lost. But as James watches on with Oscar, he thinks that if it weren't for the uniforms, he would not be able to tell the difference between the Germans and his own people. He remembers the words of his father before he left for the war.
"Go on, son. Show those damn Huns they shouldn't have started a fight with Great Britain. Send the old good-for-nothings back to Berlin."
His father had talked about the Germans as though they weren't human, as though they were a sort of unkempt and secret form of creature that lived in the sewers, something to be cleaned away and forgotten about. But here, James sees many men like himself, no doubt with fathers like his own saying similar things about the Brits. And all of a sudden, the whole war seems more than a little derisory. James turns to Oscar.
"What do you suppose we're all fighting for?"
"Ich weiß nicht," Oscar says.
I mean, for my own nation, I understand completely. Your side started it all, you know. Your country is in the wrong, there's no doubt about that. A clink of bottle against bottle rings in the air as a German captain toasts with a British soldier. They laugh heartily, and the captain pats the British man on the back. But when it comes to you and me, Oscar, James continues, what are we fighting for? You and I? Why is it that common men like us must go to war and fight each other? Oscar looks upon his own side's trenches as James speaks. Many of the trees have now been lit somehow, and joined by small lanterns emitting a warm and enchanting glow that does not belong in a war zone. James imagines what his father would say now as he sits with an enemy Hun in peace.
Damn it, boy! What on God's green earth are you doing? That dirty scumbag will shoot you the moment your back is turned. Better you take aim first.
Do you have a family, Oscar?
Family,
Oscar says, raising his eyebrows. He unzips one of the pockets of his coat and produces a photograph, handing it over to James. The image shows Oscar standing with a man who looks like a younger version of himself. At each side of them is a couple, a mother and father, no doubt. Each black and white face looks happy, content.
Mein Bruder, Oscar tells James, und mein Eltern.
Something in the way Oscar says Bruder makes it plainly obvious to James. That sorrowful, longing tone. It almost sounds like a lament to a prized and loved thing which has long since passed into memory.
Your brother, James says. Is he?
Oscar looks to the ground as he speaks.
Tot.
Im Kampf getotet.
A silence falls between the pair. James grips on to the photograph, holding on to it tightly and carefully, knowing how precious a thing it is. It may be the only photograph Oscar has of his brother. He stares at the pair of them, smiling at the camera with their parents. How long ago was this taken? Was life happy then? Could they have predicted the oncoming storm? And even if they could, how would they have even foreseen how they would be swept up in it? Pawns in a game with no winners. If only James could dive into that photograph, swim through the stitches of time and tell them not to risk any of it. Don't go to war, it's not worth it. It's not worth the heartache and the pain and the death. For the love of all that is good in this world, stay at home. James hands the photograph back to Oscar, who smiles sadly and nods his head.
Danke.
James grimly considers the fate of Oscar's brother. If a gunshot killed him, how likely is it that the bullet came from James's own gun? If a grenade had decided his fate, could James's own arm have thrown it? And yet here, his brother sits in companionable peace with the enemy.
Well, I say, James sighs.
This is certainly a moment for the history books, isn't it? If the likes of you and I are ever remembered. Christmas Day 1914 is a day, James thinks, that all of these men will remember for the rest of their lives. Gifts continue to exchange between the opposing forces, tobacco, coffee, drawings of soldiers' families. Songs continue to fill the cold and still air around them, often the very same song sung concurrently in both English and German. A lively game of football is played. It even snows a little. Just a touch. Not enough to worsen the grueling conditions of the battle, but enough to make it feel as though it really is Christmas Day. Enough peace is kindly given on both sides to allow the men to bury some of their dead. It's a sombre occasion, of course, but it's also a happy one. What fortune had graced the souls of these very men that they were allowed a proper burial during wartime? James is mystified by the strange feeling to be handing over the body of a man slain by his own people to those that want to bury him. And they receive the fallen, not with fury, but with thanks and goodwill. Captain Alan spends much of the day writing letters. James wonders if his own name will ever appear on one of these before being sent to his father. At midnight, they will be hard at it again. The guns will resume firing. The bombs will sound their furious death screams. Men who moments before were friends will once more become bitter enemies by the will of their commanders. Who will fire the first shot?
Who will break the temporary bond? What evil hex is it that can turn hands which had once freely given gifts to soldiers on the opposite sides into hands that fire bullets which end those very men's lives? How could it be that these men will one day sing songs and play games together, only to turn on each other the very next day? Yes, this Christmas Day is one that will live on in our minds until the end of our lives. Mind you, for some of us, that's not very long at all. When the day begins to darken, the men on both sides return to their trenches with heavy hearts and stifled spirits. As James climbs down into his, he takes one last look at the battlefield. The trench opposite, only 50 or so yards away, is the one he and his fellow soldiers will be sent to attack upon the blowing of that damn silver whistle. And the last thing he sees there is Oscar, disappearing into the ground with a dismally unhappy look. 1 minute. Get ready. Captain Alan stands before his trembling men, eyes fixed on the watch, whistle ready at his mouth. James simply looks at the ground, heart firmly frozen in place, and waits. Each tick makes him think of Oscar, each talk his brother. Every damned cold and unhappy heartbeat brings him closer to the dreaded push. Charge over the top. Advance forwards. Clear out the trench. He tries to remember the words of his father. The Germans are monsters. They are evil. They want the people of Europe to suffer. It's easier to think of them this way. But James knows he cannot kill any of those men without first looking into their eyes. And should it come to that, how long will the image haunt him for? To have killed men worthy of songs and celebration for nothing else but the service to king and country would be a miserable thing indeed. Captain Alland inhales deeply. His eyes widen as the minute hands of his watch no doubt nears close to the target. When he blows it, the sound is shriller, more disheartening, and much more frightening than James had ever anticipated. His own breath escapes him as he clambers out of the trench and sprints towards the Germans. Thank you for listening to the Finding North podcast. Please follow the podcast on your preferred platform and head over to chrisamorris.com for all the latest. Next week's story is a horror comedy called The Worst Restaurant in Erlingdale.